Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let me tell you a little bit about BetOnline. It remains your number one spot for NBA, MLB, MMA, boxing, it doesn't matter. Every single prop, every single play, every single point, it's all at BetOnline. When it comes to bets, when it comes to props, everything that you need is at your headquarters for sports betting. That's BetOnline. Head to the website right now, use your mobile device, sign up, get a 50, that's 50% welcome bonus. Don't forget to use the promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to get yourself a 50% welcome bonus. Come on, there's no need to hesitate. Bet online, where the game starts.
I hope you're ready to have your mind blown with the greatest health and fitness information on the planet.
Yes, bitch!
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I am not an actor, but my wife is. And so we've been married... 12. It'll be 12 years in December. So I really had to I've monitored how the industry has changed with the pandemic, with the development of digital cameras, with the development of the internet, with the development of Dropbox. You know, the industry has changed so dramatically. Not quite necessarily as crazy as my industry has changed. When I first got in radio, the idea that you could talk into a microphone and lots of different people would hear you seemed like being a movie star, right? It was like crazy. But now,
you had notoriety.
If you want to, do it. And I know a lot of like old school radio guys and gals, they get angry about that. I don't. I think that it's beautiful because it seemed crazy that you could be on the radio. It just seemed crazy. Just like it would seem crazy to be a movie star or be a professional athlete. But now if you have a desire, if you genuinely enjoy it, you can do it. And you can talk and you can develop an audience if you're good at it. And so I think the same people who get really upset about the way that the industry has changed are the same people who are probably pretty scared that they're not very good. You know, because there's just more people doing it.
Let me challenge you that, though.
Yeah.
The concept of coming up in an industry, coming up in an establishment, coming up in a place,
yeah,
you know, like K-Rock, yeah, you know, like having a position from the intern all the way up to a radio host. Do you think any of that's lost by being able to jump right in and do it all yourself?
Absolutely.
Being completely DIY.
That process is lost, but that process is only lost on the people who aren't excellent, meaning that process isn't lost on Mr. Beast or Logan Paul or, you know, I'm actually not that savvy on like really successful internet digital broadcasters, but they came up and it looked a little different, but they did the same thing. They were, believe me, Mr. Beast's first 10 videos were to about 15 people. It was his buddies and like his family. And they're like, you have a YouTube channel, huh? That's crazy. And you grind. It just looks, the grind is different, but it's still a grind, I think.
I think there's a little mini documentary on his grind when he finally made enough money to not go to college and then do YouTube the whole time.
But same with the Paul brothers are fascinating to me for that reason, because there's a lot of good looking, strapping, young, cool kids. Lots. To have their level of daring and their work ethic, and people can pick them apart about their personal crypto this or whatever. My point being is like their drive and their ability to just keep pushing forward and trying things is quite impressive, you know.
From one success to another.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's just different. You know, people got really upset about making movies in the 90s because the independent movie thing became really became a reality. And to me, what could have been a better movement for cinema overall than like the mid to late 70s and the mid to late 90s, where you started to see Scorsese go from Mean Streets to Taxi Driver, where you started to see Tarantino write True Romance and maybe get some friends in the industry, and then Reservoir Dogs came, and then Pulp Fiction. Giving people the access where it's like you didn't have to be this massive studio star to actually do it. You could do it if you felt like you had talent and you had the desire. Either way, the proof is still in the pudding. If you're shitty, I'm sure how many...
You look at Wes Anderson and the Ben and Owen Wilson and Bottle Rocket originally was like a college short film that then became his first feature and then launched a lot of their careers.
And look at we're here in Austin, Texas. You can't overlook Linkletter and, you know, what he did was just like gathering handsome people around Austin. And then here and there you get the professional, you get the Afflecks that came in, you know, there were professional actors with SAG cards and stuff like that. But he was just banging around. He's like, he found some muscle cars and some 70s clothes. And he's like, no, I want to do it like a romantic movie to my youth here in Texas. And there you go. And it's like having that ability, it opens up the doors to the people who really think they can do it. And you know what? I don't care who you are, unless you're like, there's probably freaks in the world. There's LeBron. I'm sure LeBron James is probably pretty good at basketball before he ever even got any type of instruction. You know what I'm saying? I'm
freak
sure
athlete.
I'm sure there was just freak. There's freaks out there. I'm sure there's people who, I have to assume Eminem was probably pretty good on the microphone before he, you know, he refined his skills. You know, and I'm sure there's freaks. But for the most part, people suck. Howard Stern is my greatest example from my kind of line of work. Howard's like, I was terrible. I was terrible on the radio. But I knew I wanted to do it. And I knew I could be good. And I was fucking awful on the radio. And I knew, I was like, I feel like there's something. It was for the first time in my life. I never really was a guy who had a lot of, and I came from a different era than a lot of you listening, because I even like shitty public schools nowadays, teachers can't just go, just shut the fuck up and go in the back of the classroom, leave me alone. There are kids here who, back in my day, like you absolutely could. They're like, oh, we see clearly that you're not someone who's interested in academics. Shut the fuck up and leave us alone so that the kids who are can. And I never thought like I'd be good at anything like that until I got a chance to get in the radio. I was like, I could do this. I could do it. But I was terrible. And I don't think many people like get on a microphone or get in front of a camera and are awesome. But I like same with like, I hate, and I'm not going to name names, but I hate old school, even though I'm a big fan of the music itself. I hate old fashioned kind of over the hill rock stars who shit on kids who make EDM or make digital creations musically, right? They're all like, they're just pressing buttons. It's not real music. And I was like, no. It's a different way to create art. And it gets more people creating art. I love it. You know, yes. Would I rather go listen to an Aerosmith record from 50 years ago than some new EDM artist? Absolutely. My personal taste is that. Yes. But it doesn't change the fact that, to me, if you get ideas and you feel compelled to follow through on them, that's always a positive.
Mike, what is a pedal board if not buttons?
That's another thing too, is like especially in like the extreme music world, these kids nowadays, man, they're playing okay, I actually hit the era perfectly of where down tuning became, where you saw the transition, right? Bands like Fear Factory, bands like Morbid Angel, certainly.
We're not even talking just Drop D here. We're talking.
No. Like, okay, because Iommi was the only guy from Black Sabbath, Tony Iommi. He down tuned. A lot of people don't realize this. He realized that it sounded a little bit darker. It was by accident. He had an injury. He was a factory worker in like a very blue-collar part of England where all the guys in Sabbath came from. And he injured his finger. He actually has missing fingertips on his left hand. So he down-tuned the guitar because he realized it made the string softer and he could play a little bit easier. It wasn't so painful. And then in doing that, it sounded dark. And he's like, oh, this is awesome. But then that was like he down tuned a half step. He tuned to like drop D.
Well, Hendrix was half step as well.
Hendrix was tuned, and people played with that. But Tony Iommi was like the first guy to like start writing albums, I think, really looking at that's the way the instrument's supposed to be, right? But then when I was in like middle of like high school, so the mid 90s, late 90s, that's where you started to see bands going crazy. And then when you heard bands tuning to like C pretty commonly, it was crazy. Nowadays, you go on, you look at tabs and you look at like YouTube videos of people playing. Tuning to standard is crazy. People tune just in like pop music. If you're tuned to E, people are like, what is this strange? Wow, that's what a nice little tip of the cap to the good old days.
This
like
bright honky tonk, you know.
It's very, you know, what are you playing? What are you playing? Like bluegrass, you know? Like, because like pop punk, you know, what are those kids from Florida? They're very good. God damn it.
There's a new pop punk band from Florida?
No. They're established. They're like the kings of pop. I would say they're this era's Blink 182. They're like the pop punk dudes. But Florida kids, I had him on Love Line 10 times.
Wasn't Sum 41? Wasn't
Sum 41? They're stars and they deserve their respect. But these, no, these are not. All I want is a place to call my own. Oh, you know, keep your head high and your head down low.
I have no idea, and I am a huge pop punk fan.
From first to last.
No, that's Skrillex. That's a note to self. I miss you terribly.
God damn it! I can't believe I'm not getting
roasted.
A Day to Remember.
Ah, yes.
A Day to Remember is making pop punk.
You really put them at the... You just called them this generation's Blink-182?
Oh, yeah. Those guys sell a ton of records, and they continue to change. I like them very much. They sell a ton of records, and they're really successful in that, like, that back end of, like, the Warped Tour pop punk kind of scene. But I like them a lot because they hold on to, just like Blink-182, even though you start to see them explore like much more traditional pop elements, you could still hear them holding on to like that San Diego early 90s gutter punk kind of, you know, like there was that element to it. And I like that with A Day to Remember, they're still playing like, they're playing like hardcore elements. But they're making pop punk, and they're not ashamed to kind of be open about that. And I like it. But they're tuning like B on a lot of their songs, and they're making what they call poppy songs. It's crazy how that shit has changed. Like,
well, the guitar becomes a rhythm instrument at that point, right? Yeah. Like you're doing a lot of like flat finger bar chords, you know, like chugging, you know, palm muting very heavily.
The way it sounds too when they get tight like that with the drums, and like it just becomes so rhythmic. It's cool. But I saw these guys like Carcass and Morbid Angel and Fear Factory. And then, of course, like you saw Korn with like the development of making seven string guitars. So people played seven string guitars. Steve Vai, I think they literally, Ibanez literally invented it for Steve Vai. But it was shredder weird shit. Like Korn was making music with seven strings. And then that's how heavier music became. And now dudes, they tune. I saw these dudes talking about how they tune to double drop D. So they tune, they're playing seven string, eight string guitars, and they tune the, what would be the E string to D, but then they tune everything else another octave lower to D. So it's double drop D. So it's literally drop D with another octave below.
So the root is on the fifth. Well, no, the root would still be at the top on
it's
the eighth.
But it's now like literally the drop D is drop D, but it's an octave lower than a regular guitar being tuned to drop D. So a full octave lower. And it's just like you're playing
it's like
a bass.
It's like
drum.
A bass, yeah.
You're playing a bass drum. Yeah. But my point being is like, who's gonna fucking like traditional guitar players, and then they get in like, oh, their effects and the production is so overly done and this and that. And I go like, what do you think fucking Chuck Berry thought when he heard just like basic levels of digital distortion? He was probably like, oh, these kids nowadays. It's like, things change. You start to get bored with the way things were. And I always tell people who don't have kids, I say, if you have a problem with this issue right now, and you go, the best thing to do to prevent your kids from doing it, make it seem really cool to you. If you don't want your kids to get tattoos, just cover your body. You're done. That's a great, trust me, my daughter does not think tattoos are all that rad because I have a bunch of tattoos. Anything you do, your kids want to do shit differently.
So what you're saying is be a shitty parent.
When it comes to something traumatic, I don't know, because I've seen the least yucky thing you can look at for that, how that works out, is smoking cigarettes. Because if you started to get into violence and assaults of different types, it's too yucky to talk about. But smoking is a perfect example, because if you have a friend or if you're a person out there whose parents smoked, there's only two ways to go. You're either disgusted by cigarettes. The idea disgusts you. Or you smoke six packs a day. That's how anything negative or traumatic goes as a parent. I'm talking about like cussing, tattoos, rock music versus hip hop music. If you want a great way to get your kid to not be into something, do it. Because you're just, it's kind of built into being a kid. You're like, whatever my parents are doing is certainly not cool. I need to do something different. And that's why I'm actually not all that upset about like the kids of the generation below me, below you too. You're 34. So the kids that end up coming out of the kids that are in their 20s now, they're going to hate social media. They're going to hate sharing their whole life on because their parents do it.
I can confirm this.
Yeah.
They post very few things on their social media. It's very limited. And usually it's not even pictures of them. It's like an out of focus, like mailbox.
It's some artsy.
And it's very limited. And it's interesting. It's.
I graduated high school in 1997. My sister graduated high school in 1987. Okay. So I have a very weird, and we went to the same high school. Okay. But very, like you could make a very good scientific survey or scientific study by comparing the two. Everything was controlled for. She grew up in the same household, same parents, same high school, same neighborhood, but a decade later. All of the class politics, all of the jock versus the wastoids, all of the prom queen versus like the not cool, all that shit went away when I was in high school. Like no one, I don't think I ever wore a Letterman's jacket to high school because I was like, well, I'm a fucking, it just, when I, my sister was in high school in the late 80s, that was, you were the cool guy. You were the captain of the football team. You were a good athlete. You wore prom. I don't recall going to prom. We were like, fuck that. Let's go get high. You know? And I do think whatever, and I grew up watching those 80s movies. I watched Karate Kid. I watched Pretty in Pink. And I was like, look at the cool kids. And I was like, and then by the time I got a chance to engage in that, that's not what was cool anymore. Like kind of washouts with having really nice clothes for girls was not cool when I was in high school. Like it was like having ripped jeans and stuff. And I know girls, like younger girls are doing that now to kind of as like a costume, but like it went real quick from like 80s kind of over the top where kids would save their entire money or they had rich parents or whatever. And they would go to Rodeo Drive. They would go to hip places to find, you know, Guess and the Gap was becoming a thing in the mid 80s. Like it was a cool and like really kind of cool designer, Calvin Klein, the 80s, you know, skinny models with like cool hip shit over the top guys were wearing like big shoulder pads. Everything was by the time 1997 came around, it was so the opposite. Like we all knew where the cool thrift shops were.
Now's the time to save 30% on wedding jewelry, only on BlueNile.com. Make sure your wedding ring is the one with your pick of diamond and lab-grown diamond bands, all hand-finished and graded for excellence. Or surprise her with something blue she'll love for life, like a stunning pair of sapphire earrings. Blue Nile's jewelry experts are available 24/7 to help, from fit questions to style advice. Right now, get up to 30% off at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this.
Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And the Goodwills, like, this Goodwill's better than that Goodwill. That was, like, really the cool shit. No one was like, oh my God, have you seen that guy's expensive leather pants? We'd be like, fuck that.
Was music the driving factor in that?
A lot of it. I mean, I certainly think, I've never seen shit, and I don't think I've ever seen shit again. I can imagine what the Beatles must have been like prior to me being born. I can imagine what Elvis Presley must have been like prior to me being born. Certainly a little bit what the cultural impact of Motown was. But you have to understand, as someone who was like really into music, okay, my life revolved around it. In 1991, I was listening to Skid Row, Slave to the Grind. And then Nevermind hit by Nirvana. And I was not, and it was shift like this. And I had already become really into college music and alternative music. I was already into the Pixies. I had already heard and been exposed to REM, and I was kind of making my, you know, so it wasn't as if like non rock star shit I wasn't into it yet. I wasn't exposed to it yet. It was so many of those like Hollywood Sunset Strip glam bands were fucking awesome, and they were they were ripping. And I was like, this is good. And they get chicks. And I was like, yeah, I like, as soon as, there was not, I'd never seen shit like that, where culture as a whole completely shifted, where leather pants, long hair was a thing. And then almost immediately it was like, that's laughably out of touch. That's how fucking, I remember what I was doing, where I was. I remember it like it was yesterday when I saw the video for Smells Like Teen Spirit. I wasn't watching MTV. I was watching Total Request Video, or I think it was, but it was on KDOC Channel 56. It used to be Channel 56 back in the early 90s. It was a local access channel in Southern California, KDOC. And they showed what was kind of like TRL, but it was their version. And they played much more. They were playing like Body Count and shit. You know, like they would play cussing. They would play hardcore, and they would play extreme music too. So they were playing extreme hip hop. I would see like RBL Posse and like really deep kind of underground hip hop, and then underground metal. And that was their request show, right? All of a sudden that video came on, and I remember sitting there coming after school. It was super sunny. I was sitting on my couch in my living room, and the riff coming in. And I remember the snare, how Dave, like, bucko, 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 dun, 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 dun. And I was like, whoa, this is good. This is good. And I'm listening. And then how the video came in, where it was the cheerleaders were kind of clean and nice. And then by the end, they were all tatted out and like with the anarchy signs, and everyone was tearing this. And I was like, oh, fuck. Whoa. Whoa. Because at that, you got to understand, at that time, I'm watching Motley Crue videos. I'm watching Janet Jackson videos and stuff. And I was like, whoa, this is kind of crazy. This is, and then like that, you started talking about it. You were like, hey, have you heard this band Nirvana? And it was like, and then just kind of the small reserve culture, it spread like wildfire. And I've never seen shit like that. There's been people who blew up. There's been people who got bigger. Eminem blew up. You know, when like 99, 2000, Eminem became, you know, high. Everyone was like, oh shit, this is pretty fucking crazy.
There were a lot of white angsty kids in the Midwest who really connected with that.
There was a thing that happened. And I never, at the time, I don't think I was very aware of it. Now I can look back and say, this is what it was. It was that I loved Guns N' Roses. I loved Slayer. I loved it. I loved NWA. I thought it was amazing. When I was a little kid, I was like, this shit is amazing. But I loved it because it was escapism. I never once, even when I was a little kid, I was like, I'm never going to be going to my show Dancing with Mr. Brownstone with my long hair and leather pants. That's not going to happen, but it sounds fucking awesome, you know? And I'm never going to be fighting the police in Compton. But it was escapism. It was like, just like you like watching Game of Thrones, I don't think people watch Game of Thrones because they can relate to it. I think they watch it because it's escapism, right? Or fairy tales and giant action movies and stuff like that. But then you see those movies that hit home where you're like, oh my God, this character relates to me so much. And that was what you started to hear Nirvana, you started to hear like Weezer and these bands come. And then I said, oh, this isn't escapism. I'm connecting with these bands. And that was the first time I really had that exposure, because the 80s was not filled with all that much connecting with this band shit. I'm sure it was out there. It existed. I know now I go back, I'm friends with it. I could see, I'm fans of it, you know, like early new wave and early kind of post-punk. Fugazi was there. Minor Threat was there, you know, but at the time in like popular sphere, I was not exposed to that. And then that was when that stuff came in, where you related to people, you related to shit, you related to art. And then I saw Clerks. Art as a whole changed. That's my point. Is like, I didn't go see these movies and go like, whoa, I'm blown away. I did. I liked them. But then there was these things happening where you're like, oh, I relate to these people. I remember watching Clerks at the New Art. What used to be, now it's the New Art. I forgot what it used to be called. It was it's a artsy theater in LA. And I used to go, and my friends and I went to see Reservoir Dogs in the theater. I was fucking 13 years old, but I was really into that shit. I was really into it. And because I remember seeing like really extremely violent and very artsy films and sometimes I didn't understand it, but it still like it would have an impact on me. And so I started to get into that shit where these characters, they're not superheroes. They're not crazy. They're not super rich. They don't have exceptional lives. They had shit where I could go like, even as a child, oh my gosh, I'm connecting this. And then when I was 19, Fight Club came out. And having this, the wool pulled over my eyes for my whole life, where it's like, I'm dreaming of being this rock star, superstar, supermodel, actor, movie star thing. And it's like, I'm not. And because I'll never be that, I'm really fucking depressed and my life's empty. Maybe I should go and have someone kick the shit out of me and realize, like, be snapped back into life. So my point being is, like, there's these cultural trends that happen that just revolutionize the way people look at everything. And I don't know if that'll happen anymore, because everyone, the internet, like, things happen nowadays. Like, the government of the United States of America pretty much acknowledged that they have UFOs that they encounter, and no one cared. Now shit happens and no one, it just, because everything's moving, it's so kind of diluted. I don't know if we'll ever have these seismic shifts culturally about stuff, you know, unless heaven forbid there's another like 9/11 level.
Oh, we had Tiger King.
But even Tiger King, like I watched like an episode and a half. I was like, fuck this. This is very, very dysfunctional people being dysfunctional. And I'm not into this. I'm not happy about that. I can't watch unscripted stuff if it's pure. It's going to be, I can watch plenty of scripted stuff. In fact, darker the better. But I can't just watch people be addicted to drugs or take advantage of young kids in relationships sexually, or even, or maybe some of those, I'm not even going to start naming names, but some of those kids that those dudes that the main Tiger King guy was in relationships with, I'm pretty sure they were a little developmentally disabled on top of being drug addicted. And I'm like, what do we do? What's going on here, man? Like,
you're describing half of Bravo.
Yeah, And then, you know why I always stick up for the Jersey Shore kids?
Why?
Because you can watch Jersey Shore and be like, oh, look at these fucking maniacs, right? But I would interview them all. They would come into Loveline from the peak of their fame down to the, and they were always like, dude, I'm 19. I'm from fucking Providence, Rhode Island, a small town. I'm from you know, Brick, New Jersey. And these people put me on TV and they send me the coolest clubs. Like, what do you? I'm like, no, you're doing exactly what you should be.
Because they're, well, I guess the oldest ones are probably your age, and most of them are like, what, 5 years younger than you?
But yeah, probably they're in their late 30s.
And they're 5 years older than me.
Right.
And so growing up watching that, I could relate because I knew Jersey people like that.
Right.
It was almost like you peeled back the curtain of what Jersey culture and life was like. And it really was a madhouse like that.
And
that's what Jersey clubs were.
I have to say, when I lived in New Jersey, the people I liked the most were Guidos. They were always the coolest ones. Yeah, no, that shit can get old where it's like all the time, like everything's about their hair and stuff. And I would pick on them, but they were all, like, I would not know them that well. Half of the day after meeting dudes, they'd be like, gotta come over to my grandma's house. She's making sauce. She makes the best sauce. I'd be like, dude, cool. Thank you, man. Right. I know you know that I don't have a lot of friends here and you're like adopting me in, like you're being nice to me. Like, Guidos were always the coolest guys. I never understood that aspect of like where that, but then you get into like the Real Housewife stuff. And then I go, why are we clapping and applauding for this? It's sad, you know?
Agreed. I think we start like promoting, I don't want to call it like, I don't even know how to call it, but we're promoting things that like a lifestyle we shouldn't hold in high regard.
All right, let's get down to business. An active lifestyle can cause hemorrhoids. That sucks. Lucky for you, they're south of the border. South of the border is a holistic approach to dealing with the affected area. Go to southoftheborder.com, use code AHOLE, AHOLE, get yourself 30% off. That's pretty rad. And this is not an area of your body you want to put bad ingredients in. Make sure you turn to South of the Border. Southoftheborder.com, code AHOLE.
Now's the time to save 30% on wedding jewelry, only on BlueNile.com. Make sure your wedding ring is the one with your pick of diamond and lab-grown diamond bands, all hand-finished and graded for excellence. Or surprise her with something blue she'll love for life, like a stunning pair of sapphire earrings. Blue Nile's jewelry experts are available 24/7 to help, from fit questions to style advice. Right now, get up to 30% off at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This is one thing, and I'm always reluctant to go on like a gender slant with it. This is one thing where dudes, I think we can, unless you're a fucking idiot, unless you're just a fucking idiot. But for the most part, guys don't see that stuff of other guys behaving like that. I don't care how rich you are. I don't care how much of a fucking baller you are. If people are screaming at each other, talking about like, your shoes are bootleg and they're screaming. Like most guys who watch it would be like, what is this? What are these fucking douchebags doing? Fuck these guys. There are smart women. Here's a better example than those Bravo shows. I was working with at the radio show. I was working with super smart, very ambitious, really respectable women. And one day she came to, they were coming and they were talking about how the Sex and the City sequel is coming out. And they're like, gotta go see it. I was like, you know, it sucks, my asshole. Like you're aware that this is going to be fucking, they're like, yeah, but we have to. And I go, explain that to me. I get the show. The show had great writing and there was moments where I could get into it. But you went to see the first Sex and the City movie. You're actively telling me it sucked your asshole. You know the sequel is going to be worse. You've seen critical reviews and everything. They're like, yeah, but we have to go see it because Samantha. And I'm like, but you're not dumb. You're not like, if this was college age, like bubblegum popping dimwits, I'd be like, well, okay. These were women with careers and lives and brains and IQ and ambition. And I grew up watching the best show ever to me when I was a little boy was G.I. Joe. And I saw the previews for the G.I. Joe movie and I was like, don't ever get me near that. Fuck that.
No, but you will watch a 60-year-old Mike Tyson fight Jake Paul.
Yeah, but that's, again, that's unscripted. That's reality.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I have to know, we're not talking about 60-year-old just anybody. I have to assume, since seeing training footage, Mike Tyson can still uncork some shit.
Nah.
You don't think he could knock me out right now if he caught me clean? Absolutely he could.
Go watch the end of his career.
Yeah, but he was very
It wasn't great.
Emotionally and mentally.
Better example, you saw the Star Wars. Wait,
time out. He was fighting Lennox fucking Lewis in his peak at the end of his career. Like, you can't. He was fighting Evander fucking Holyfield.
No, there was like four or five fights after that. There was a hard skid.
Yeah.
And then he didn't look that great against Roy Jones. And all the training footage is of him against Roy Jones.
But that was an exhibition. That was, and they both, I think they both agreed, like, they're not knocking each other out, right?
Right.
That was on paper going in.
But it's a 60-year-old man.
No, he's 60. Yeah, no, he's 60, but he's not just any 60. Like, for instance, I'm not a good wrestler, right? But yeah. I have to think, like, If Dan Gable and I had a match in 6 months, like, you'd still probably put a lot of different money on Dan Gable than you would any random 60-year-old.
I'd put money on you over Dan Gable.
He's been open about his injuries, though. He can hardly move.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, what if I had a jiu-jitsu match with Hickson?
Gi or no gi?
And your choice.
I think you can give him some fits.
I think put all your money on Hickson.
That's fair.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and you got to include Tyson in that category of that caliber of guy, you know? In my opinion, you do.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
I've rolled with Hickson. Granted, it wasn't a competition or life or death, but it is. You feel something, unless you, and if you don't, you just don't understand what you're doing. You don't get it.
I guess I have a question about that. Did he control you more or was always in front of you in the sense of every position that you tried to change and anything you tried to do, he just kind of seemed to like effortlessly walk to the next
much counter. More of that. There was no top game. He was essentially lying down. Like he was going to play guard, you know? And I also, even then, this was 10, 15 years ago, he was not like a super young guy. And even though you're like, this may be the greatest practitioner ever, you still are, I'm like, I'm not blasting a double on fucking Hickson. You know what I'm saying? It was Crone's Academy. It was Hickson. Hickson was there coaching. And
I should have blasted a double.
What's that?
You should have blasted a double.
I just think he would have beat the fuck out of me. You know what I'm saying? Like
worth it.
It's like those sparring in striking sports where you see people, you know, Sanchez, like, oh, would you like to spar? And then someone goes like goes for a head kick right out of the gate. He's like, oh, really? Is that how? And then you end up limping home, you know, and end up in the hospital. I guess I had too much reverence. I would never even try. And secondly, I'm not good at wrestling. So why would I? But it was so how casual he was about switching positions. And then every pressure, all pressure I would apply, he would react in such a with such fluidity to something that put me in a worse position. Every piece of pressure I apply would just dig my hole deeper. And it was very, but you know, in fairness, Crone would do the same shit. And Crone's like 140 pounds. And I think I told you about this, that one time, and he wasn't even trying to talk. It was just after training and it was later at night. And one time I was rolling with Crone and I couldn't pass his guard. And then he reached over and started texting. So he's completely controlling me like this. And I'm covered in sweat, trying my best. And it was just so amazing how
I've had a few people beat my ass with a dip in,
yeah,
and then work me over to the side of the mat, go spit in the trash can, and then come back to beat my ass.
That's the most gangster shit, in my opinion. There's been a lot of, in the history of MMA, there's been a lot of gangster things that have happened. The most gangster shit I ever saw was when Khabib decided to go to, took a savage. It's not like he was like some beginner, some internet star who wanted to get in there with Khabib. He took Justin Gaethje across the ring to do a different submission because he's like, I don't want to do it in front of his family.
Yeah, he didn't want the armbar to break and his arm because he knew he wouldn't chap, so he switched to the triangle.
He's too tough. I know he would not tap. I did not want to break arm in front of family. His family was there. I took across the ring and put him, made him tap. And I was like, oh, so now you're just deciding? What? Like, that's the most hard. Because, like, again, it wasn't some scrub. It's Justin Gaethje. That was the most hardcore shit. I was like, this guy's not even real. He's like Bane. He's like a real life Bane. All right. I'm going to wrap this up talking about some, hopefully, some useful shit for you. Leading off talking about the internet and how it can sway people's trends and everything. There's been, hundreds of thousands of meta-analysis and studies done with incredibly controlled settings, incredibly well-thought-out settings. Some are crappy and meaningless, and they're, you know, kind of sponsored by corporate interests. But throughout all this, the level of attention scientifically put on nutrition and training right now is so extraordinary. And the only common theme at all, because right now I will find you in 10 minutes, I can find you a dozen studies that shows that eating low carb is the only way to go for health and for weight loss. And I can show you eating an extraordinarily high amount of carbs and low protein is the way to go. I guarantee you, trust me, there's really kind of very useful data taken away from all these studies that can show any type of uniform results. Except for the fact that when you're dealing with humans, when you're dealing with Homo sapiens, it's unbelievably individualistic. And the reason I point that out is because I don't like people getting online and then telling you, you want abs, brother? Check out my abs. All you got to do is follow this diet. All you got to do is do this training program. Because what works for me, what works for buff dude A, what works for buff chick B, not only might not work for you, very, very reasonably won't work out for you because you're a different person with different age, at a different gender, with different training history and a different lifestyle and a different metabolism and different reactions to blood sugars and glucose metabolism. And it's a fucking wild, wild idea of how our bodies chemically react to certain stimulus and how different it is for each person. So here's what you got to do. Take the like three things that you can use from scientific research shown in the last four decades. Take the handful of things that we can all, thank you, collectively agree is true, okay? Some of it is going to seem batty to you because the narrative hasn't necessarily got along to like the mainstream public. But there's a handful of things that are true. Resistance training actually is probably better for you than cardiovascular training when it comes to having a nice looking body. Resistance training isn't exclusively for people who want to be big and huge. It's actually for people who want to lose body fat. Eating in a caloric deficit is good for losing weight. Eating in a caloric surplus is good for gaining weight. Okay, these are things that, like, they're not individualistic. This is just part of being a primate, right? Outside of that, if you want to be vegan, if meat disgusts you, then find foods you like that puts you in a caloric place that you can help, that will help you achieve your goals. If you want to lose body fat, here's really what you got to do. Maintain a small caloric deficit for a pretty long period of time, resistance train, and get your protein up. Does it have to be through the roof? No. But 0.7 grams for your body weight, or more realistically, if you could get a gram for every pound of your lean body mass. This is a big problem I see with a lot of people. They say, eat a gram for every pound of body weight. What if you're 350 pounds in fat? Do I want my client or my friend who's a big guy, he's really, really overweight. He's 350 pounds. Does he need to be eating 350 grams daily of protein? Of course not. He needs to be eating probably a pretty similar amount of protein as I eat, because the lean body mass, when you take away water and body fat, what's left over, is going to be relatively similar. You want to have about a gram of protein for the amount of lean body mass you have. So an easier equation, I say like 0.7 grams for every pound of body weight for most people. So you get your protein up, eat a good amount of fiber, 30 grams for most men, 25 to 20 grams for most women. And that's going to give you better food choices overall. It's going to make more nutrient-dense food choices for you, and it's going to be very filling. So it'll help you with your metabolism, and it'll help you adhere to a slight caloric deficit. Okay? That's all we're going to get. Because of that, because of those guidelines being so open, now find foods that you don't hate and eat them to achieve those goals. Do you need to be carnivore? Do you need to be paleo? Do you need to be keto? Do you need to be vegan? No, just fucking find the foods that you don't dislike that will meet those criteria. And then lift weights 3 days a week. Maybe four if you're really, you know, trying to achieve some specific goal. You can do 3 days a week full body. That's honestly what I do. You could do 3 days a week, upper, lower, going back and forth between upper, lower, or A, B, A, B, A, B, just back and forth. My point being is, like, try to increase your strength in a progressive manner. Try to adhere to a caloric deficit with higher protein if you want to lose body fat. Try to adhere to a slight caloric surplus with higher protein if you want to gain muscle mass. And train relatively close to failure in a very well-regulated amount. If you try to do this and get results soon, you will dig a bigger fucking hole for you. And all the bullshit out there about how I got ripped in fucking 6 days. Do you want to know how I lost 100 pounds in 6 months? Yeah, sure. Because you're either full of shit or you got surgery. And if you did, by some weird magic trick, not like some of these people I know that I really respect and I encourage you to, that lost 200 pounds in 5 years and they kept, and now they look amazing, right? I'm talking about like all, some of these ads, some of these like, get the guys who are, A, by the way,
Let me show you how this works. Do you want to see how results can be deceiving? I will show you how I, with my magic tricks that you can only get by signing up for my programs, got shredded in 6 weeks following this program. This is what I look like in March of 2023.
I'm so sad. I'm fat. Look at how much.
This is the same outfit I'm wearing 6 months later. Same outfit on the same couch from following my amazing program.
Look at that. Yeah. All from my incredible diet. Instead of this. Look at my big fat belly. Yeah, you can see there might be abs there because I train. But then I did this and I got my incredible abs from my training and my...
And then imagine if I had like Adobe, right? Or some like amazing Photoshop. Just blur my shit out on the before and then do shredded fucking abs after, you know, tighten it up.
I get your point, but your abs look great. Either way, it's a bad day.
I kind of failed that one, didn't I? My point being is like, well, okay. It's actually, you're right. It's a bad example because I'm not a big guy. So, I mean, I like these guys and these gals. So I'm saying this out of respect. Some of these guys that are way bigger can do that with a lot more. It's way more impressive because I've seen some like a Jeff Nippard do these posts where he'll do a split screen and he's like, can you see how amazing my advancement has been in like, see, and he's like, just kidding. These are 10 minutes apart. And because if you're like these big jack dudes can make push their belly out and they can kind of hunch over. I'm kind of like I'm 170. I weighed myself this morning at 174 pounds. I mean, I'm not exactly like a big mass monster. But my point being is like all of that shit is meaningless. Here's a clip of Dustin Poirier talking to Joe Rogan. This is a couple years old. And he's talking about one of his weight cuts when he had, because look, financially for his career, everything, the second Conor fight was a huge thing. He couldn't turn it down, but he was like 190 pounds and he needed to be fighting at 145. And, sorry. For the first Conor fight. Cause, they ended up doing 155, I think for either catchweight or one, was it 155? So they fought at lightweight for the second fight. And Joe is commenting on how he was a different guy just from not having to be so depleted. But check this out. Listen to this.
First of all, you weren't debilitating yourself getting down to 145 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, you were a big 145. Like how rough was that cut?
It was horrible. And it made me hate the process because my quality of life sucked. You know, training camps were torture, you know. I would walk around 190.
Jesus, I'd get up to 190.
I'd get up to 190.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You get up to 190 and go down to 145. 45 fucking pounds.
Dude, let me tell you this. When I fought Cub Swanson in London, England, I took it on short notice and I had just won a fight before and it was right around Christmas. So I was eating. And when they called me, they asked me my weight and I told them, 170, but I was like 187 or something. And it was like really short notice. So me and my team fly out there. I'm 30 pounds over when we land. You know, fight week, they check.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God. That's so crazy.
They check your weight fight week when you show up to make sure. I was 176 and it was a 45.
Fight. Oh my God.
Yeah.
But you made it.
Made it.
How the fuck did you make that?
I don't know. Almost died. I feel like weigh-ins were kind of blurry. I don't like my memory's gone from weigh-ins. It's not good for you.
I want to point a couple things out. Losing that weight in that shorter period of time, he said, training was miserable. The biggest problem was my quality of life was so low. And talking about the Cub Swanson fight a little bit later, Joe goes, what was that like, that weigh-in? He goes, I don't remember. My brain was lacking in glucose, so and I'm training at the same time. I actually don't remember that weigh-in process.
as a 30-year-old man with a perfectly functioning brain? I don't remember. And I get so many emails and requests from people, and they're like, I'm getting married in 60 days. What can I do? And I go, you can't. You can, but why? What for, man? The old adage of too much of a good thing is fucking true. And it's never more true than in this arena of making body changes, of making transforming your physique. If you want to lose 60 pounds and have abs like I did when I showed you when I was doing my, that takes you fucking a half a decade. If you're a regular dude, I'm not even talking about super fat. If you want to lose 60 pounds and be a smaller, fatter version of yourself and be, sure, real quick, you'll go to work and your friends will be like, whoa, you look great. And I love that. I love when people say, but if you think you're going to transform your physique to do the like, oh my God, in a short period of time, you're not. If you think you're going to be one of those ladies who goes on like a TLC show because of your transformation, you think that happens quick. It doesn't. And almost anything you do in life, I hate to sound like over the hill guy, okay? But this is true. And I got a really successful, really talented grappler here and a really talented videographer who understands the nuances of wildly complex equipment that you have to travel with and then how to get the best angles and lighting. If you want to be good at anything, if you want to improve at anything in life that's really going to be worth it when you're on your deathbed and you go like, fuck, man, I did it. You will not only not have that happen quickly, there will be shit tons of time going, I don't think I'm doing this right. I don't know if I'm getting any better. I don't even know if I might be worse. This is... I'm not good at anything. I'm not a guy who's like, oh my God, that guy, he just seems to be good at everything. And what, you know, there's celebrities like that where they're like, he just seems to be amazing, you know, all the things he tried. I'm not that guy. Okay. But you know what? Being on the radio, I got pretty fucking good. And around people who were really good going, you're pretty good. Interviewing people last minute where they drop out and I get replaced with a guest. I've done no research and I can have, I was like, shoot, we got 2 minutes to fill. Let's go. Boom. And also hit the post and make sure you promote the sponsor for today. Done. Boom. I get it. And I'll tell you, I'll be very fucking honest with you. There's been 150 times when I was 25 years older, I was like, I got to quit. I got to find a real job. I fucking suck. I don't think I'm getting better. I'm never going to be good. And every single time I diet and every single time I go into a training routine and I was like, I'm going to get ripped for summer. Throughout that process, whether it was 1999, whether it was 2024, whether it was me getting ready for now, where I'm beginning summer here in Texas, okay? Throughout the whole time, there was countless periods where I was like, maybe I got to go online and find a different program. Maybe I got to get back on GAC. I'm going to order some steroids. I know I've got the HRT and all, but I need to get on some real drugs. I need me some Anavar. I need some fucking Tren. I'm going to get some stimulants and I'm going to get shredded all day, every day. I'm like, you know why? Because it's fucking hard. It's fucking hard and it takes effort and it's prolonged, sustained effort. And after that buildup, I'm sure just to be a nice guy, Giorgio will back me up. But I think he's being real. When it comes to being good at wrestling, how many times were you like, well, I'm not, this isn't for me?
Mike, I'm not going to lie. I tuned out until you started talking about Anavar, and now I'm really just locked back in.
Locked
in. Yeah. You started talking about the stack and like you just the good stuff, and like I'm with you, brother. You know, everything else you said, not paying attention. What is the stack?
Anavar and Trend got everyone's attention. No,
but yeah, it's a... You suck until you don't.
And how many times when you started with probably a VHS camcorder and you're filming shit and you're like, I'm going to be David Fincher And then you get into it, you start to realize more and more, like, holy fuck, aperture. Oh my God, lighting. Oh, this is fucking impossible, right? It's hard. It's hard, and you just got to keep grinding.
It's hard, and it sucks, and just keep showing up.
Right? And that's all. When you want the results to happen next day, trust me, either they're not gonna, or you're gonna have to resort to doing things that are gonna make things worse than before. If Dustin Poirier wasn't promised a ridiculous amount of money and an incredible boost for his fame and then subsequently stability for his family long term by fighting the most famous fighter ever in the history of the world, Conor McGregor, he's not fucking losing 40 pounds in a month and putting himself through that. That's why I always say these are the two things. When you're trying to, especially when trying to lose body fat, the two most important things you always have to keep your eyes on are your health, number one. If you're going to resort to doing things that are compromising your health in order to lose weight faster or more effectively, don't. You fucked up. You're fucking everything up. Because down the road, somehow it's going to be worse for you. And two is performance. Because if you're getting dramatically weaker, if you're having dramatically reduced power endurance, strength endurance, then your caloric deficit and your means by getting lighter and leaner are not working. You may get those results on the scale quicker, but if you don't manage your health and your performance first and foremost, then you're making a mistake. And it's hard to get that through to people because you will get the results you're thinking you're looking for probably quicker by compromising both of those things. I can line you up with some stimulants and training programs that will make you lose a fuck ton of weight. A fuck ton of weight super fast. Like, whoa, people be like, Jesus Christ. Do you think long term that's going to be good for your physique? No. There's a caloric deficit, there's a diet, and there's a way of living your life where your performance in the gym and outside of the gym, frankly, your quality of life, if you measure other forms of performance, are consistently increasing, and your health is consistently increasing, where I can worry about my abs for summer and still go get my blood work done 2 weeks from today in Los Angeles, and the doctor will go like, look at you, buddy. Look at your blood pressure. Look at your blood sugar. All right. Good job. You know why? Because my abs are really important to me. Yeah, being shredded is important to me, but it's far down the list from getting my blood work done as a father and a husband and having the doctor go, yes, internally things are good. Now, if I made a lot of money posing, if I made a lot of money being in action movies, let's have a discussion. Trust me. I'm not crazy. How much money is it to compromise that shit to get better results? The money exists, or the lifestyle benefit exists. You want to put me on DMP, the craziest steroids, all the stuff that even like some pros are like, and just tons of fucking D-ball and Anaval and whatever, you name it. You want to put me on that. But graduated $10 million over a decade? Okay. I think like my daughter can go to any college she wants. And then after that, maybe if I do, get fucking liver damage, or they have an amazing house and savings on it. Fine. If you want me to look amazing, I feel like I did okay. You guys saw my abs. I'm doing okay. And not only am I not compromising my health, it's getting better. It's getting better every day. And you know what? This podcast may not be blowing up, and I may not be at the height of my career. I've had times where I come in here every week and I hang out with Georgia. I got a smile on my face. And I'm happy to see people, and I'm happy to see people everywhere I go in life. I sit down on a plane, and I'm like, hey, dude, what's your name? I'm Mike Catherwood. Nice to meet you, huh? I'm not fucking like, life sucks. I hate my life. Nothing's going good. Because there's choices you can make. Go away from all the other nonsense. You will bog yourself down with fucking nonsense about what types of protein to eat. What type of diet is perfect for me and my... Fuck that. Get into a deficit. A small one. It might take some effort. You might not even know what a deficit is. Get some rough idea of how much you're eating in a day. A small deficit. 300-400 calories. Stick with it. You know how you do that? Higher protein, higher fiber. And within that, within those kind of parameters, find food you like. You don't need to count calories for the rest of your life. I don't count calories anymore. But at first, you will. You want to hear something crazy? They did. Here's about these studies I talked about, right? They had these people report back who were not losing weight, okay? These are people who either didn't lose weight or couldn't, in their eyes, lose weight. They were following an 1,800-calorie diet. They were men smaller than me. A little bit. Not small guys, but, you know, 160-pound guys, right? Every one of them reported back. It was a small study. It was like a dozen dudes. Every one of them reported back. I've been eating 1,800 calories. And I can't lose weight. I think I've even gained weight. Want to know the craziest part? They're monitoring them. They all ate at the least 2,500 calories a day. They all reported their activity and how much they were burning off. At least 50% overshooting how much they were burning off. So I don't want you to have to live your life counting your fucking calories, going out there sitting with, you know, your app and measuring and shit out. It sucks. But you need to for a little bit, because none of us is a wizard. None of us. We're all fucked up. You will think I had a teaspoon of peanut butter before bed because I was a little hungry. You had a half a cup of peanut butter. You had 900 calories you weren't fucking planning on having. That's my only point. So get an idea of how much you're eating. Then a little less. Little less. And make it not miserable for you, because you're going to do it for a while. It's going on for a while. Lift weights 3 times a week. And if you need more help, if you need more detailed help, because this shit is hard. I don't want to sound like I'm oversimplifying it, but I want to simplify it the amount that you need it simplified. And that amount is most shit that you're bogging yourself down with psychologically, intellectually, and emotionally is nonsense. You don't need to fucking only eat steak, and you certainly don't need to only eat plants, and you certainly don't need to eat fucking gluten-free paleo this. Suck my balls. What you need to do is eat foods that you really like that are high in protein and higher in fiber, and find a small deficit. And you're going to sit there, and you're going to stay there for a while, and you're going to like it. You will. You'll learn to like it, because you're going to be eating foods that make you happy. And you're going to be learning to introduce healthy habits in your life without compromising your enjoyment of it. And you're going to get to the gym, and you're going to start to see yourself getting stronger, and you're going to like that too. But that's not easy, okay? It's not easy to, especially if you don't have like a thorough understanding of it. Go to my Patreon, sign up. I want to help you. I like it. I enjoy it. There's parts of this job I don't like. I'll be very honest. I don't like digitally promoting myself. I don't like figuring out algorithms and shit. I hate it. It sucks, and I don't like it. You know what I do like? Someone writes me, I have Patreon clients. I say, man, you really helped me change my life. I fucking cry. Ask my wife. I cry like a fucking baby. I was like, dude, I did it. We did it, dude. So check it out. Anyway, thank you to Giorgio. Thank you to you. And in this crazy mixed up world, it makes you think that nobody cares. Remember, I do. Be good.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Hey, everyone. I am Fran.
And I'm Tom.
And we are the co-hosts of the Native Plants Healthy Planet podcast.
On the Native Plants Healthy Planet podcast, we talk about native plants, obviously.
We have great guests.
My name's Joel, and I'm staying in room 123 at the Ramada Inn right now.
We have a lot of fun.
Which of the following was the name of Uli Lorimer's latest book? This book is actually in this room right now.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And don't try and cheat and look up here because I turned it around. It's that book right up there. So you might be able to see part of it.
And we learn a lot.
We have the most biomass per acre in a redwood forest than any other place on the planet. And people are like, more than the Amazon? Yes, more than the Amazon.
So tune in, have a couple laughs, learn about nature, and help the planet while you're at it. Until then, keep it native.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.